Welcome to The Lowdown, KMXT's new daily show dedicated to giving you the up-to-date information we have available on the COVID-19 outbreak and how it's impacting life on Kodiak Island. The Lowdown will focus on the facts as provided to us by local and state officials. During the show, we give you access to local officials and experts on COVID-19 and community actions related to it. If you have questions for our guests, please email them to lowdown@kmxt.org or call KMXT at 486-3181. You can find a list of upcoming guests on our Facebook page or on our website, kmxt.org. Audio from each day's program will be posted on the website.
I think we're on, actually. Sorry, morning. Good morning. Thank you for tuning in today. It is Thursday. That means it's another mental health show. This week, the return of some of our local counselors. Today, Stephen Flora, the clinical manager at Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center, and Phil Giordanelli, again, is in substance abuse program manager at CANA. We have a couple of questions here, but we've been having an engaging discussion already before going on air. I have some questions. We have some topics to talk about. If you'd like a question answered specifically, shoot us an email, lowdown@kmxt.org, or call 486-3181, and we'll try and get your question answered during the show. Morning, gentlemen. Thank you for appearing on another mental health edition of The Lowdown.
Morning.
Morning.
Good to be here.
Well, let's just jump right into it with, you know, we now have three cases in Kodiak. Things are starting to heat up across the state. What kind of things are we seeing in town now over the course of the last 3 months? We probably got a good idea of the pulse of what's been happening. Can you share that with from what's happening from a clinical point of view at Providence?
We have seen an increase in substance use, and we had a little bit of a prediction of that. But that has increased quite a bit. Not just people calling the counseling center itself, but folks appearing at the hospital. We do the psych on call for the hospital. So there's been a bit of an increase in substance use in the last 2 to 3 months. Concerning because it's a little higher than it would be this time of year normally.
Give me an idea of some numbers. I mean, what are normal numbers for substance abuse calls at the hospital?
Well, I can give you numbers of a particular month of May. And a little bit of the end of April, we had 12 individuals who appeared within a 3 to 4 week span. That's pretty high, just substance issues. That's pretty high. We would probably have about half of that normally. In a 4 week period, we might have 4 to 6 people appear. We had 12 people appear in that same 4 to 6 week period. So in that period, it sounds double. I wouldn't say it's been doubled the whole time, but that period was a spike, and that concerned us a little bit.
Phil, are you seeing the same kind of increases for requests for services at CANA?
Yeah, we've seen some for this type of year. Normally in June is a downswing because of the fishing season. So usually during the summer months, substance use services are lower, but currently we have a full slate of people coming in. We're seeing a lot of people that are relapsing, so we have a lot of current clients that have been sober for a while, and then you see an influx of methamphetamine and heroin use again. When normally you don't really see that surge until after the fishing season, so we have seen a lot of intakes, but what we're seeing mostly is people that were our current clients that are relapsing at a different rate than they would normally at this time of year.
Are can you speculate on the reason why? I mean, is it COVID driven?
That's partly the reason. When I talk to my clients, a lot of them are still concerned about the COVID-19 epidemic. A lot of them are experiencing depression and anxiety. A lot of them are concerned because of the job market is kind of still wavering. So there's a lot of factors that are applying to people that are currently receiving services with us. And I think that's probably because of the circumstances that's going on right now.
So are we anticipating that these kind of stressors are going to continue to increase the demand for service and into the indeterminate future now with the cases continuing to rise?
I'm not sure, but I think that's something we need to look at. I believe that if there's more cases on the island and this virus continues to increase, we will see a demand of more mental health and substance use services from Canada and Providence.
So, Stephen, are we the biggest attention getter for you then is the increase in substance abuse at the hospital, but is there also an increased demand for generalized mental health counseling from the community now?
There has been some, but not as much. Who we're seeing is the recurring folks that we see normally in the counseling center, the folks that we had seen before. I will say this, because it is telehealth, we have less no-shows because people don't have to get in their car and come see us. They're just sitting in their living room waiting for the phone to ring or the so in some ways it's more convenient for our regular clients, and I think that has actually helped in a way. There's not as much crisis with those folks. At least I'm not seeing that on my caseload. There are new people who call the front desk and do want some services and say, I need help with this or I need help with that, or is there a therapist I can see? We've done probably about 5 new intakes in the last 2 to 3 weeks. So there is a little bit of an uptick, yeah, starting.
Now, you've also changed as things opened up a little bit, we're not stuck with telehealth now, right? I mean, are there some services that are being provided in person at both organizations?
A little. We do still deliver food boxes to those who are CSP clients. Some of those folks would not have much groceries if we did not deliver those. So a case manager, whenever the Salvation Army does the food boxes on a Friday, a case manager takes the big van and delivers those food boxes, rings the doorbell, makes sure the person comes out and gets it, doesn't stand there and talk too much. So we do that. We can do some paperwork and coordination of care with agencies, but we don't do that in person. What will start is psychiatry appointments for Dr. Burns. Those folks can come because he will be here live. There is a whole protocol for that of only so many people in the waiting room, 2 people, and they are in distinguishable areas of the waiting room. We can text you from your car in the parking lot, those kinds of things, so that we don't have a whole bunch of people sitting in a room waiting for an appointment. So there's quite a bit of precaution there for our current clients, too. I'm not saying everybody should dial up and say, I need to see the psychiatrist. But the people who are on his schedule already, he's going to try to see live beginning this week.
I just got a flash of Lucy and Charlie Brown for some reason and having drive-in psychiatry services.
We could put that out in the parking lot, but we haven't done that yet.
Well, if we're all fundraising, what the heck? Great idea. I did not know that we had psychiatric services on the island now. Is this just something I haven't been aware of?
Well, Dr. Burns comes every other week, and he hasn't come every other week. He's been doing it by telehealth. People can dial him, or he does it through Zoom. He comes every other week for 2 days. I think that's changing now. He's going to come every other week for 3 days, maybe, to our location. And he's been doing that, well, at least since fall, for us. So he comes live, or did, and now he'll return live again every other week for psychiatric.
I need to clarify that too. I was specifically referring to Providence because I had visions of Evelyn coming across the parking lot here towards me, which there are other services being provided other than at Canna and at Providence. And that leads me right into, you know, we've had an opportunity to talk a few times now, but let's get into kind of the nuts and bolts of it a little bit in the difference between psychiatry and psychology. I mean, how did you two gentlemen wind up in the places that you're at now? I mean, how did you go through a career path that wound up with you being a clinical manager at Providence and a substance abuse manager at Canna? Tell us the story.
Well, I guess I can start.
Yeah.
Well, I started, I was in the military. I was in the Coast Guard for 25 years. And in the last part of my career, I was working in the health promotions department. And we used to have a substance use person that worked with military members on the base. And I went through a Navy Marine Corps military counseling course that was in Petaluma. I'm sorry, it was in Point Loma, San Diego area. And that was that's when I got started, and I became I started working with military members that were going to residential treatment, or if they needed aftercare, that were dealing with alcohol and even drugs. And then from that point, I focused on becoming a counselor for the state of Alaska, and I did all the education and certification process for that. And I've been working in the field since 2009. So when I was still in the Coast Guard, I started working at Providence, and I started helping them with an outpatient program, doing assessments, running groups, doing case management, individual sessions. And then when I retired in 2015, I was able to be a counselor at Canna, working in the SUD program, the substance use program. And then from there, I think what I wanted to do was I wanted to work not only with military members, I want to also work with the Native Alaskan population. And I wanted to work with the other community members in Alaska, not just military people. And then from there, when I went over and retired in 2015, I was able to put in for the manager position at Canna. And so through that process, I was able to run this intensive outpatient and the outpatient programs that we're providing now. So. And in that course of time, I've learned that this job is something that's near and dear to my heart. I've suffered with family members with addiction. I've worked with lots of people that were friends of mine that died because of drugs or alcohol or mental health issues or suicide. It's a pretty prevalent problem in the military. And I just feel it's something that I had a calling for and I enjoy doing. And it's something that I think I really enjoy providing those services and making sure that people get linked up with what they need before it becomes, a deadly disease, which it does.
So
how I got started in the field.
You have how many people working under you there as counselors?
We're at Carolyn Street, which is the Canna actually provided a separate building for our services in 2000. I think it was 2018. So in our building, my program, I have a mental health addictions clinician, James Price, who's a master level addictions clinician. And then I also have two counselors that are state certified and a case manager. So we have a team of about four, maybe five people at sometimes. We have interns. We also have other therapists that sometimes work with us. So about 4 to 5 people that run our intensive outpatient, our outpatient programs, and all the other assessments, intakes, and case management stuff.
Okay, so now when we add that to the services that that Providence is going to be talking about here in a second, and then other services that are made available through the community, and the folks from the Coast Guard base came in and talked about the services they provide as well. We're talking about a significant community investment in mental health counseling, and particularly in substance abuse counseling. I mean, that to me means that there's a significant demand in the community for your type of services, right?
Yes, I would say our biggest referrers, that our agency referrals, are like adult probation. We work with them on a almost a daily basis. So anyone coming, you know, from the incarceration, that's some felony probation, will be referred to CANA or Providence for either one of those services. The Coast Guard base, they refer people to us. So the ASAP program, that's the Alaska Safety Action Program for alcohol, which is misdemeanor services, the courts, the Office of Children's Services. So we do get lots of external referrals, plus from the medical department of CANA, we also get referrals. So it is and it's actually increased from the last few years that I've been doing this. But the services, you know, by and fold are something that's consistent, even though, you know, we've been providing this for years.
So, and now we're seeing an increase in demand because of the pandemic.
Right. And, you know, what's also interesting, I was talking to the probation officer, James Homey, who's the Kodiak PO, and he's saying that it depends. He seems like there's still an influx of drugs that come into Kodiak. Even through all this pandemic, there seems the availability to still get heroin and methamphetamine at a reasonable rate. So even though we're in this restriction, there's still a lot of drugs that are pushing through the city. And, you know, unfortunately, the byproduct of that is we get a lot of people that will require referrals to our program. So I think because we're in a pandemic and people tend to want to self-medicate to help them with their symptoms, I think they turn to drugs and alcohol because of that.
Well, we see nationwide trends, right, that the increase in alcohol abuse has gone through the roof. And I didn't really think about it in terms of demand for hard drugs.
Right. I mean, it's out there, and alcoholism is still probably our number one referral for. I mean, we have a lot of people that are referred from health reasons because of, you know, alcohol abuse that's causing medical issues and liver problems and heart problems. So we still get a lot of that from just the medical field, not even from the legal side.
Well, we can go into we can talk about the demand and the increase in staff requirements here in a second. So let's turn to Stephen. Stephen, can you tell us a little bit about how you got involved in mental health counseling and how you became a manager there at Providence?
Well, yeah. Years ago, I was in telecommunications, and I worked at Eastern Mennonite University. And I became curious about human nature, as we all are. And they had a master's degree in counseling. And by working there, I got to take courses, won a semester for free, and eventually finished a master's degree in counseling. And there's a whole long pathway I won't get into of how I got here. But I did get here as a recruitment from CANA, actually. I did work at CANA first. That was 2012 to 2015 I was here. And then I went back to Virginia to be near family, and I worked at University of Virginia in the psychiatry department doing collaborative care with the psychiatrists in clinics. And I just decided I liked Kodiak enough to come back. So I called Mary, who used to be the director, and I said, any openings up there? And she goes, sure, come on up. So then after I was here, I got promoted a couple times already and supervised the CSP program and the community support program, and then became the clinical manager. So I think for me, I was the youngest of four children. We talk about birth roles and roles people have in life, and I would say if you look at those roles and the labels, I was the rescuer or the person who made sure everybody was okay.
Yep.
And so it's natural for me, in a way, to want to help, to want to make sure people are feeling good. So that's part of it.
What's the third child in the family do?
He turned out pretty good.
Yeah.
It was the second one who didn't.
Oh, family, boy.
But he's on the right trail now, too. I talked to all of them, so they're all good.
I love going through that birth role thing, being the second child. So now you're, are you content being in a management position as a, I mean, it sounds like the first attraction for you then is the clinical edge of the day-to-day dealing with people. Has your life changed that much?
No, actually at my level of management, I still have a caseload and I prefer that. One of the higher directors said, how will you feel not having a caseload? And I said, well, I won't feel good about it. And so I've not given up. I see about 10 to 12 people a week still with the management duties. So I don't ever want to really give up the one-on-one with people. I think that's why I'm here. I don't want to be the paperwork guy.
Yeah.
That's not why I'm in the field. I can do it. And I'm pretty good at it, but I like the people. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Phil, are you in the same position? I mean, have you moved more from the counseling level to the desk level?
And with, like what Stephen had said, I still have a caseload. I still see about, 10 to 12 people as well. And then I also cover groups. So if I have a counselor who's on vacation or sick, I'll stand in and I'll facilitate groups if necessary. And that's a big thing. This job, I have to have the same kind of contact. The reason I got into counseling was to help people. But I still have the managerial side of it and the admin side, and I just have to learn how to balance it. So, because I think as a manager, I have to ensure that my staff have the resources they need to provide good services to the clients. And I think that's why I got into the management field. It's because sometimes, you know, you need funds and you need grants and you need help from other departments to really have a robust and effective program here. And I think that's why I chose to be the manager of this program. And I think that's the same thing with Stephen, is we have a lot more say in what goes on in the programs and what we need, and I can relay that information to upper management at CANA, and they've been great about providing me certain funding or services that I need to make sure that these programs, you know, last or long term.
Okay, so
yeah, and I still see people as well.
And a management role, both of you now are then not only dealing with the clients who come in, but you're dealing with your other counselors as well. So how's the mental health of your organization, you know, how is that progressing? Are you having to do more work to keep your counselors ahead of the game, you know, as far as dealing with the extra stressors that come with this pandemic?
I think we've stepped up at Providence and kind of shared some jobs, if you will. filling in for other people, switching the on-call schedule around. We're always willing to, it's a true team, I think, and we're always willing to say, this person needs a break, or let me do that. Let me be on call for you tonight. And I would say my staff is not afraid to ask for that either, which is good, because it is about self-care and about caring for yourself. We have, you asked Phil about positions. I have 15 people who answer to me, five clinicians, four case managers, three rehab aides, and two chemical dependency counselors. Three of those positions are not filled. So when you have that gap, it does kind of put the pressure on some other people. So we've been trying to alleviate that a little bit and say, let me do your on-call. For example, I'll cover that last night I was at the hospital for someone covering on-call for about 3 hours. Not even my week to do it, but I already was involved with the cases and they called me directly. So not a problem, not a worry. So we kind of take care of each other, I would say, as far as self-care and making sure we're not getting burnt out or those kinds of things.
Well, I'm going to jump the gun a little bit because my radar just went off. If you have three clinician positions already open that you haven't, what's the difficulty in filling positions right now?
Well, it can be difficult just because we're Alaska.
Yeah.
And then we're on an island. We're Kodiak. So recruiting is a constant process, I think, for behavioral health. And don't want to talk about it too much, but we applied for a grant. We don't know that we got it yet from the state. And the state is aware of COVID creating a strain on the system, perhaps. And so these grants, there are seven rural locations that get a grant, and then there are four or five larger cities that get certain grants. And the grant says, we realize that this may put an undue burden. We will give you these monies for the next year. And it can be anything from creating a position to asking for more equipment or more ability to provide services or things like that. And so in the grant we wrote, we asked for two new positions, and that would fill two of the three that are empty. And we asked for two iPads and a couple little sundry things. What is interesting about the state, and I think what that says is, and that should make people feel good, and you alluded to this before we were on air, the state is recognizing that COVID may create an undue burden on what we already have, the resources we already have. And they're smart in the grant in that they only give 3/4 of what you want to do. You have to match it with 25%, which I think does a couple of things. It makes you more committed to the mission that you're writing in the grant itself. The individual people and then the agency has to match that with 25%. So I think that's, and it's also saying, let's not give away all the taxpayer money in these grants. Let's make the agency actually own a little bit of this. But they are recognizing that it could create a strain on behavioral health services specifically. These grants are for behavioral health.
So this is through,
we're kind of excited.
It's through State CARES Act funding?
This is actually its own, it's called COVID-19 Response, and it is from the state. It is federally backed, though, and there's a limited amount of monies for Alaska. It's given to each state federally. And so there's a limited amount of money. So there are seven rural grants that will go out or be granted. And I think there are somewhere like 15 to 17 rural communities that could apply. I'm not privy to the knowledge of who applied or who we're competing against at this point, but we're pretty excited about it, and I think we stand a pretty good chance. of getting our grant.
But, well, I guess my question is, though, is if the grant is for adding two positions and you have three positions already open, doesn't that mean that even without COVID here, you have the demand and the need to have three positions already filled? So then how do you fill the three positions with two new ones? I mean, it just seems like...
Well, right. There's ongoing other negotiations, too. We did do a presentation to a university in Idaho who has graduates. We did this presentation back in April, graduates of a social work program. And to recruit people, we've decided people won't come to Alaska, so we're going to go find them. So what we did was we went to a university and did a presentation and said, come to Alaska, and here's what you get. Here's what's cool about Kodiak. Another arm of our agency, well, another division in Valdez, Providence is at the Valdez Hospital. Matt, the director there, did the presentation with me. And so there's other ways we're recruiting, because people don't just find us. We're not on a, you can't drive to Kodiak on a drive. So we've gone seeking other.
You can get to Homer now.
Yeah, you can. If the ferry runs.
If the ferry runs, yeah.
The...
Is there a glut? I mean, I can't imagine going into a room of college students in Iowa and saying, hey, would you like to go to Alaska? And they'd say, no, I think I'm happy here. I'm going to move to Nebraska. You know, there is that Alaskan attraction. It seems like it'd be fairly easy to recruit somebody to come up here.
There are, because you're hitting young people, majority of people who were graduating were younger. They're all about exploring the world and what's exciting out there and what they want to do. So it is kind of attractive to many of them. Like, it's something different. They think Alaska's neat. They're, you know, to some people it's romanticized. So there was a pretty good response of people who were interested in coming. So you'd be surprised. I don't know if I said Iowa. I meant to say Idaho.
No. I said Idaho. Idaho's at least got mountains and streams and things you can look at. I mean, if you've ever gone through Iowa.
Yeah. Iowa's, a little different.
Are you, Phil, doing the same thing? Are you... part of your job is apparently chasing down grant money as well. Are there a lot of grant funds available now due to what's perceived as what's going to be an increased demand for service?
Yeah, so right now, Canna, we do have a grant department and a grant coordinator, and I do work with them if there's any SUD, substance use disorder grants or mental health grants. The biggest challenge, though, is, you know, like Stephen said, is getting the people over here. Another issue, too, is having them stay here. So we'll get people for 1 or 2 years from a college that want to come to Alaska, but we're really looking at someone who's vested in Kodiak. We do have a Native Alaska preference, if possible. We do recruit people from the villages. We recruit people that are beneficiaries. And then we try to get people that are going to not only work here, but stay here and you know, develop here. So we do have I have a counselor training program. So I can take someone with limited experience and put them in a training program and try to get them up to a level where they can at least be a counselor, or if they're working on their bachelor's or even their master's. There's a lot of opportunities in Canada to grow people within the community and not depend so much on external people coming to Kodiak, because, like I said, we're transient place here in Kodiak, and there's a lot of people that are coming in and out, and what we're trying to find are people that are vested in the community and really want to work with the types of populations that we have. But I don't, you know, that we have a whole recruiting department and HR takes care of that, but I do sit in on the interviews, and we do bring people up here if they're interested, and we give them tours of Kodiak, because they may come up here and say, you know, I can't afford a house, or this is not what I thought was what Alaska was like. And so it is hard to get people that are going to not only work here but want to stay here. And I think that's a challenge that, you know, any agency is going to have in this small town on an island in Alaska.
Well, for preventative measure, you know, go ahead, Steve.
Well, I was going to say I would second that, and I think, Phil, you're probably doing what we're doing. There are a couple people in town who finished a master's degree but aren't licensed, and they are going to be interns in our office. I didn't mention that, but that labor is free, but we have to do supervision for them and turn those documents into their university so that they, or into their licensing board so that they can take an exam. But those are key people, and you make a good point, Phil. They're already here. They just finished their degree, and they want to stay here. And so we have two of those folks that when you're not licensed, you can't bill private payers. You can't bill Aetna, Blue Cross Blue Shield, and those types of things. But they can do some Medicaid work and bill for it, and they can do other things in our offices. So you're right, Phil, we need to groom the people who are here and keep them because they're more likely to stay.
Well, that's interesting. Just because you have the diploma doesn't mean you need to take further steps, like spend a period of time as a resident or something before you're allowed to practice.
Yes, it is like a residency for clinicians. LPCs and LCSWs, a licensed clinical social worker and a licensed professional counselor. I am an LPC, a licensed professional counselor, after graduation. And you even have internship and practicum before graduation, 800 hours of that. After graduation, I came from Virginia. It is now 3,000 hours of direct work before you can sit for the exam. So it's pretty intense.
3,000 hours. 3,000
hours. Yes, 3,000. And 3,000 hours, of those 3,000, half of those have to be direct client contact. Now, that's Virginia's criteria. In Alaska, it's a little bit different. It may be less hours than that, but it's going to be a similar breakdown where half of that has to be face-to-face with clients. And then you're receiving supervision from someone in the state of Alaska who's licensed to do that supervision, and you can't do supervision in Alaska until you've been a therapist for 5 years. So there's quite a process to being a OPC or an LCSW. Yeah.
I'm trying to do the math in my head to figure out how long this actually takes somebody. I mean,
well, after graduation, it can take a year or two just to get those 2,000 hours of, you're waiting another 12 to 24 months to sit for your exam.
Now, is there a large pool?
It's not for the faint of heart.
Yeah.
Is there
a large pool of people who are coming out of college now with that want to go into the field?
I would say that
I
would say there's a percentage. There's a lot of people that are taking social work or psychology, and but there's always a need for. I mean, especially in addictions, not everybody wants to work with addictions. We can have people with social work degrees or psychology degrees, but it's not an emphasis. So a lot of times we'll get people that we have to certify and bring them up to a level where they could be a state certified addictions counselor in addition to being having a master's or a bachelor's in whatever field they a related field. So it is, and our process too is there's a 2-year process to become a certified counselor for substance use in addition to your educational background, depending on your education level. And then there's also a practicum and other things. So to get someone to commit to all that and you know, stay focused and get the supervision and work the way up, it's a 1 to 2 year process to get somebody that's versed in doing counseling without, you know, supervision and running groups and handling clients. So it is very challenging, especially because we don't get an influx of people that come in and apply for, you know, the behavioral health jobs. And even in the Coast Guard, we'll get people that transfer up here in the Coast Guard, you know, dependents, and they'll only stay 2 to 3 years depending on the tour of their spouse.
Right.
So there's always that that turnover need. Here at Canada, the turnover is incredible because of just the types of people that come to Kodiak and leave after 2 or 3 years. And it is a commitment to, you know, to get the education and to get the certification or the licensure that you require to build these agencies, these private insurance agencies. And that's always been a challenge with Canna, and I'm sure with Providence as well.
Well, this is an expensive place to live. Is this a field that, you know, people can live at a comfortable level in Kodiak? I mean, if I'm looking down a career path and saying, this is what I want to go into, am I going to be able to move to Kodiak, Alaska and do this and not have to work two jobs?
I would say for a clinician job, if you are an LPC, LCSW already, the pay, just because everything's more expensive here, I think the salary is higher. My experience is what a clinician gets paid an LCSW or LPC in Virginia is a bit less than they get paid in Alaska. And so I think Alaska, or specifically Kodiak, recognizes you're going to have to pay a few more dollars to get the right people and to get people right to want to come and to be able to afford to be here. And so, yeah, I would say that a clinician could survive here. We do have two levels of clinician at Providence. We have a clinician one, and that clinician one can do the on-call at the hospital because they are supervised, or they could do Medicaid, and those folks don't have to have a license. Clinician two are already licensed folks, and so there's a slightly different pay scale there, but people are paid more than they would be for the same job in the lower 48. I will say that.
So is there any interaction with either of your organizations and, like, people at the high school, at the kid level, you know? Is there any interaction with Kodiak High School, or is there interaction between you and the college?
Yeah, we at Providence have two counselors. One is at the middle school, Chris is at the middle school, and Leslie Foy has been at the high school for years. And so there is a direct contract with the school system to provide there is school counselors, but sometimes their roles are different, like school scheduling and things like that. I think they do more counseling these days than when I was in school, true counseling. But we do have Leslie in the high school and Chris in the middle school from Providence. And they're there every day of the school year, actually, with the kids, students.
And that's an interesting answer. That wasn't where I was going, but I didn't recognize that. What I meant more was like career development type things to sort of steer people that might be inclined to want to go into this field in the long term. Is there interaction between Providence and Kodiak College or the University of Alaska? You mentioned something about working with universities for people when they're trying to get their stamp or whatever it is when they pass the test.
I would say, Mike, that we participate in the college fair, the job fair at the high school and at the college. So Canada does have booths there, and they talk about what opportunities are available at Canada and, you know, in this field. So we try to reach out to them. I do presentations at the high school, so I do talk about addictions, but I also talk about the career of being in the mental health or substance use field. So we do try to do outreach. We have a great prevention department that goes out to the community and tries to work with the youth, and not only for treatment, but for, you know, talking about what a career path could be working in this field.
We go to those job fairs too. Providence does. And we have representatives from behavioral health there, but we also talk about all the other jobs that Providence does. Could be nursing field, could be other things.
Well, we kind of strayed up, strayed off the path a bit today, but it was a really interesting discussion. I'd like to thank you both for participating today. And let's just close with where we're at right now. You know, this pandemic and the shutdown and the gradual reopening and now the appearance of new cases has left people in a greater feeling of anxiety. I think I can't judge the pulse of the community probably as well as you folks can. I mean, what are the things that we should be aware of right now, and how's the general person on the street supposed to kind of plod on in the next months?
I'll start and
good
let Stephen finish. Yeah, so I think we encourage people to stay active. We encourage people to do healthy activities, continue to see their mental health or counselors if they have any issues. You know, there's a whole list of things that we talk with patients. And if anyone has any issues, they can make an appointment in Canada. They can talk to their primary provider. We can link them up with a behavioral health consultant, give them some, you know, mindfulness or relaxation techniques. And then there's also, if they're concerned about getting tested, we have you can call the 486-9870 line and talk to a nurse or talk to a behavioral health clinician. And if you want to get tested, you know, Canada still provides free testing for the community at the East Elementary parking lot from 9 to 11. And then we do testing after hours in the clinic at Canada. So all they have to do is call Canada, like I said, at the 486-9870, and we'd be happy to answer any questions or help people if they have any needs.
Stephen?
Yeah, we are open. Anybody can call the front desk. The 481-2400 is the counseling center number. I would say human beings are social creatures, and I think that's probably what's creating a lot of this. It is counterintuitive to be quarantined or restricted. And I think I get the point of loosening it a little bit. But I would also say use your precautions while you're doing that. Your behavior of being with friends is okay, but the distance, the masking, I don't think that should go away. I think that should still remain and keep your group small. And I think the state has mandates about that anyway. But let's be safe and continue to be that way for a little bit longer, because I think it's important to protect each other. But we are here. Call us. Reach out. And let us know what you need.
You know, thank you. Thank you both for spending time with us. It has been a pretty informative discussion. I appreciate talking with you. Have a safe week. Keep doing what you do. And we'll talk to you again sometime in the near future, probably.
Okay.
Well, appreciate
thank
it,
you.
Mike.
All right. Have a good day.
Thank you.
You're listening to KMXT Kodiak, 100.1 FM and HD. We're also streaming live on the web at kmxt.org. We're going to go right to performance today.